Okay, so the last couple of lines of the Masechta. We said that if the carpenter is working by the balabas, then everything that he produces, even the sawdust or whatever, belongs to the balabas. Tananabanam, Masatse Avanim, people who shape stones into the proper shape, Ein Behem Mishum Gezel, there's no issue of Gezel with the pieces that they chip off. Mefaske Ilonis, Mefaske Fanim, people who chop off extra unneeded branches from trees or from vines. Menakshe Higi, people who chop down thorn bushes. Menakshe Zroyim, people who pull out weeds from between plants. Ba'odre Yiraka, so people who pull out the extra plants from among where plants are too crowded together. Bizman Shabalabais, Maksud Aleim, Yeshbeh Mishum Gezel. When the Balabas objects and wants those things that were pulled out or whatever, then there is an issue of Gezel with taking them. Ein Balabais, Maksud Aleim, Hare the Shaloi, but if the Balabas is not Maksud, then he can keep them. Amr of Yehuda, Kshus Vachaziz, Ein Behem Mishum Gezel. Kshus, the Kaskuda, it's called in English, it's a plant they used to use in making beer, but it grows wild. So Vachaziz, or green, unripe, unripe grain plants where the grain hasn't started growing yet. Ein behem mishum gezel. There's no issue of gezel with them because most people aren't makbid on them. But asur dekapti yesh behem mishum gezel. But in a place where they are makbid, then there is an issue of gezel. Amar Ravina, masa mechastia asur dekapti. And Ravina says, masa mechastia is a place where they are makbid because, as Rashi says, it's a place where there are animals and therefore they need good pasture.
This was in Eretz
Yisrael. No, in Babel. Masa mechastia is a town in Babel. Hadron aloch kagozel basra is lichol masechta bavakama. We'll do the hadron, the official stuff, and the kaddish first, and then we'll tell over something that what the Rebbe talks about this, what the Maharam Shif talks about this, etc. Hadron aloch masechta bavakama v'hadron halon daiten aloch masechta bavakama v'daiten halon le'nisni shemunach masechta bavakama v'le'sisni sheminon le'ba'amal den v'le'ba'amal de'osi hadron aloch masechta bavakama v'hadron halon daiten aloch masechta bavakama v'daiten halon le'nisni shemunach masechta bavakama v'le'sisni sheminon le'ba'amal den v'le'ba'amal de'osi hadron aloch masechta bavakama v'hadron halon daiten aloch masechta bavakama v'daiten halon le'nisni shemunach masechta bavakama v'le'sisni sheminon le'ba'amal den v'le'ba'amal de'osi yirotam lofanah hadanei lehen v'la'vishen shteher teros chomer netzene bo'el mazeh v'tei manu le'lam abo chanin ma papa rom ma papa nachin ma papa achoy ma papa avamoy ma papa rafin ma papa rochosh ma papa suchu ma papa odor ma papa dor ma papa V'harav na'adanei lehenu estir v'tzeres chavafinu v'pikolam chavesizo v'niya anachna v'tzeteni v'tzeteni kolam chavesizo kolonu yoyde eshmecha v'lo min esar asacha l'shma Yiratum of Naha Dene Lehenu, Kishem Shazatanu, the same Masekhus of Akama, Kainta as Rainu Lahaskum, Masekhus, as far as Machem of the Simon, Luma, the Lamanishma Velasis of Akama is called the Vetamator Sahab Ava, was called Kalatanoim, Amurim, Samar Hahamim, Yamad Bonu, Zarenu, Shalai Samar Shaturum, Pinu, and Pizarenu, Zeras Arenu at Ulam, Viskayan Bonu, Visalah, Hotan Khaiso, Bishop Hotishmer, Tishmer, Allah, Bakutai, Hisi Sikha, Givi, Ibri, Yamaha, Yitibla Hoshnais Haim.
What's your father's name again?
Can I open it?
Today, that was me.
I was looking at the cook now. Yeah. The lemons by the almond. But I'm not sure. Yeah, but dirt. But there was a lot of dirt there.
There was something on the floor. Yeah.
So you say why? Because
I'm not sure. Pick it up. I'm not sure. You saw the bottom with the pig. You saw.
Yeah, I went there for chocolate. Wow, man, what a wreck over there.
Okay, the Shabbos was
waiting. I watched the whole show. What's that? You had that. From the moment of Shabbos till 1 o'clock in the morning, that I'm buying.
I
am.
There was it. The last two things we learned in these last couple of lines of the Gemara were one about stone cutters, that they were allowed to keep the pieces that they cut off, and the other one was the last line over there about that in Mas Machatia, they're particular even about Shus V'chazid, and they don't give them away. There's a sicha, there's a hadron that the Rebbe made on Bava Kamma many years ago. So first of all, we mentioned just before that the Marsha is probably the first one to ask the question, why does Amasechta not end with a dover toy? And he answers that's why Rashi took the trouble to end with the word toy, that they need mira toy, they need good pasture. But even the Gemara itself, he says, ends with the last four letters are Yud and then Hey, Vav Aleph, which represent two names of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei and Adnai. Maram Schiff takes a different point of view on it. He says, what's the importance of the fact B'nai Mos Machasi was so particular about this stuff? He says, first of all, it brings from a story in the Zohar that the place wasn't always called Mos Machasi. The Zohar tells a story. Originally, the place was called Kfar Tarsha, the village of Tarsha, which Tarsha, by the way, that Rebbe points out, in the Sicha means dry, means hard, dry ground. So that's the place was called that originally. So that's what Maharam Schiff says. That kind of place is conducive to growing grass that will feed lots of animals. That's why animals were an important thing there. Anyway, the point is the Zohar goes on to tell that at one point there was a plague going on over there, Rahman al-Islam, a couple of the Chachamim came there and saved them by saying the Parashas HaKetoros and so forth, and then afterwards they were told, Mina Shemayim, the people of this town need to be taught how to do tshuva. And they did. They all did tshuva. They became Tamir Chachamim. And therefore, the place was renamed from Kfar Tarsha to Mos Machatzia, which means the protected city. So therefore, Maharam Schiff says, the point is, since this place is Tarsha, it's dry, hard ground, it's not really conducive to farming, therefore, it was conducive to raising animals. And therefore, that's why they were so important. That's why unripe grain over there, they can feed, like hay, they can feed animals, is so important to them that they're marked on it. Then he goes on to say further, though, okay, but why, so, you know, is it a good middah of them to be mastered on it? He says, yes, because if we're saying that they're Tamar Chachamim and Tzadikim, a Tzadik is a famous thing, a Mamoni Chavavol of Yosem Egufa, even the smallest amount is precious to a Tzadik, because he can use it for his Avodah. So therefore, yes, it was important, especially because of the mitzvah to feed you animals before yourselves. The Rebbe takes that idea and continues with it in his Hadron on the Sefer Bava Kamma, which he delivered in Tavshin Chav Dalet, Chafav, that year was the Sefer, I guess, that he learned in memory of his father, of Levik. Part of the Sicha is printed, the part having to do with the stone cutters is printed in the Likud Sicha, it's kind of a few tests. The rest of it about the people of Mos Machatzia is in Teres Menachem, Tavshin Chav Dalet. About the stone cutters, then, the Rebbe goes off a sicha, not really a sicha, but a short thing that's printed in Sefer HaTolda for the Rebbe Maharash, that the Rebbe Maharash said in his time at a hadron, at a siyum that was being done from a Sefer Bava Kamma. His son, Rebbe Menachem Mendel, his youngest son, Rebbe Menachem Mendel, had made a siyum on Bava Kamma when he was 15, and the Rebbe Maharash spoke at the time. So he mentioned in connection with this that this idea that we're saying the stone cutter was allowed to keep whatever he cuts off the stone. So we know when Moshe Rabbeinu carved out the second bookers, the Eibishter tells him, Psolcha, Psolus Yehashalach, you can keep the leftovers for yourself. So the question is, why does if we're saying the stone cutter was able to keep it all for himself anyway, what does the Eibishter need to give him special permission? And so the Rebbe Maharash says, because there it's not just ordinary stone, it's sapphire. It's precious. Even little chips of it are worth something. So then the Rashba, the famous Chassid, the Rashba says, to the Hadrishta, does it make a difference, the value of regular stone or the value of sapphire? And the answer is that Amarnash said, yes, that the luchos were being carved down here on earth, and down here on earth it makes a difference. So the Rebbe explains what did the Rebbe Maharash mean by all that? And what he meant is like this. Why is it only the Braisa in the Gemara mentions this concept about stone cutters that they can keep the pieces that they have left? Why? The Mishnah is written in Eretz Yisrael and reflects conditions in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they built with stones. Even small chunks of stone, therefore, have a value over there. So you can't assume in Eretz Yisrael that the Balabas is not going to be machped on them. Therefore, you can't keep them. In Babel, they don't naturally have stones over there. That's why Migdal Babel, for example, they had to invent bricks and build with bricks. So therefore, even if a person does import some stones and build something with them, we assume that the chips are not something that anybody would bother with.
There's not enough.
There's not enough for them to be worth bothering with. Well, in the Midbar, they're also not building stone houses. They're traveling from place to place. Therefore, ordinary stones, Dhaka, there wouldn't be an issue. Sapphire, on the other hand, yeah, has value everywhere, and therefore the Eibishter had to give him special permission. Psalacha. What's the point, though? What's the point about the luchos being carved here on earth rather than up Lamaila? The point is that Rebbe explains that this idea that we're saying that Moshe was able. Both luchos, the first ones and the second ones, are made from sapphire, but the first one the Eibishter carved out himself. The second one Moshe carved and the Eibishter inscribed.
Both were made out of sapphire.
The point is, the Rebbe explains, the fact that Moshe is able to keep the chips of sapphire represent the pilpula d'oraisa. The Gemara tells us in Nedarim that pilpula d'oraisa, the fact that there's a give and take in Torah, the fact that there's different dais and you have to reconcile them and all, that is all something that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu personally as a matan. He was a toiv ayin, he had a good eye, he was generous towards the Jewish people, and gave it over to us. So therefore, Lamaila, there's no such thing as Kopola Derayta. There's one Eibishter, and there's one Chachmaser Ratzon Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu over there. There's no room for pilpul, for different opinions, for reconciling things. Only because the Luchos, because the Torah is given here on earth, to Neshamas in Gufim, therefore there comes up such a thing as chips of sapphire, the Kopola Derayta, which technically was supposed to be all given to Moshe, but he, in turn, handed it over and gave it all over to us. The Rebbe goes on to explain in the Sikha over there that the connection between this and the beginning of the Masechta, is about the Arba of his Nezikin, which, among other things, represent all the various major sources of klippus, of Ra in the world, among them being the Chet Ego, which is the Shur, the selling of Yosef, which is the Bur, and so forth. The breaking of the Luchos is another act of the Chet Ha'egel, is another one of those things. The creation of the second Luchos is the beginning of putting all that back together, the beginning of turning those Arba Avos Nezikin into, as the Rebbe Maharash goes on to explain over there in that short Sicha, into the three Avos of Kedusha. So turning from Ra and making it over into Tov, the way it's explained in Pachim. So that's about the Masatzei Abayim. Now, returning to the people of Mechuza, so the Rebbe takes this idea that the Maharam Shif talks about, that first of all, it was a dry, barren area, and therefore was good for raising cattle. So we see from that story in the Zohar that originally this place was a place of Rishoyim, or Amei Oretz, or what have you, and they made themselves over into Tzadikim and Bnei Torah. Therefore, it represents the power of Tshuva. It also represents the fact that we see even the place got an upgrade in its status. First it was Kfar Tarsha, a village, and now it became Masa Masafia, the city that is protected. So like it got an upgrade in its status. So therefore the people over there, yes, like Maharam Shif says, they're very particular about their chazis because they use it to feed their animals, yes, because the tzaddik is very particular even about the nth degree of his mammon, because this way also, that Rebbe explains over there, the point of it is, he's extra careful even with less than a shava pruta of his own mammon in order that other people will learn the same way, to be careful with even less than a shava pruta of somebody else's money, even though technically, as we've learned in the Masechta, only a pruta is considered gezel, but a tzaddik is careful with even less than that. And so, yeah, why are they machped on this stuff? Because they have to feed their animals, and not only feed their animals, the gashmius, but also, in other words, what are you doing? You're feeding an animal. You're feeding the nefesh of Bahamas in order to turn it over into ruchmius. The animal ends up getting shechted and eaten by a person, and therefore it's raised up, to kedusha. And therefore, even that little bit of chazis was important as part of that process. And the B'nai Masa Machasya, more than anybody else, who represent the power of turning the negative into the positive, they're the ones who adapt a more Machbid on this than anybody else. Maram Shif adds, by the way, the end of the Masechta, so the last bit of the Masechta, and in general the last two Prokim of the Masechta, have been focusing on the whole idea of Gezel. Why at this? I mean, of all the Nezikin, why does the end of it focus on that? He says because that really is the thing to be most careful about. We see, we're coming up, in 2 weeks is going to be Yom Kippur. We come to Ne'ilah, the climax of Yom Kippur, and what do we say over there in the two extra paragraphs that we say in Ne'ilah, that we say in no other tefillah, L'man nechdam le'oshet yadenu. We ask the Eretz to help us stay away from what's unjustly gotten in our hands. Gezel, and all the various forms of Gezel. Because that's the thing to be most careful about, and therefore the Masechta ends with that to underscore the importance of it. So the time is now, yeah. So Marsha points out, like I was saying also, that the last letters of the Masechta are Yud and then Hey Vav Aleph, which represents the names of the Eibishter, Yud Ke Vav Ke and Echye, some of the letters of one and some of the letters of the other. And then Rashi also, besides that Rashi ends with the word Toiv, Marsha points out, you also have the last word before it is Mir E, which ends with a Hey. So the last four letters in Rashi on the Masechta are Hey Tef Vav Vez. And Marsha says, the significance of that is, if you put the letters of the Aleph Beis into pairs, Aleph with Beis, Gimel with Dalet, etc., the letters Haftoiv are the matches to the letters Yud and then Hey Vav Aleph. The Yud goes with the Tes, the Hey goes with the Vav, etc. So, thus far, what we find in the sources, in Marsha and Maram Shif and whatever, talked about it, to add for our own purposes over here, this Masechta now that we just finished, Bava Kamma, is the 21st Masechta that we finished in our study cycle over here in Daf HaYomi since we began this year. We're now going to be beginning Bava Metzia, the 22nd Masechta. Well, the name Ekye, which Marsha says is represented at the end of the Masechta over here, has a gematria of 21, and the word Hatov, with the last four letters that Rashi uses over there, is a gematria of 22. So the Ekye, the Rashi mentions on the Pasuk in Shmos, where the name Ekye is introduced, that it represents Ekye, that the Eibishter says, "Hey, I'm with them in this Golos, and I will be with them in all future Golosin." 22 is the number of letters is the number of letters in the Aleph Beis. So now that we're transitioning from one to the other, it should be also that we transition from, there shouldn't have to be the Ekye, that the Eibishter says, "I'm with them in Golos anymore," because it should be already Daloi Golos, Ois Golos. And we go into the Rashi mentions about the pasuk in Shmos, and we should go into Hatoiv, the Hatoiv represented by the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis tonight also being Chof Hei Elul, which is when the Eibishter started first speaking with the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis to create the world that we should take a see that should be like there was originally Ikar Shchina b'Tachtonim Hoisa, that we reach that point again, that Ikar Shchina is b'Tachtonim again.
I'm standing like in the middle of the show.
Why did you choose Sapphire?
I'm not the set. I don't know.
I mean, Sapphire, depending on the color of it, I've seen different proportion, whether, for example, that it may have been blue, which represents chesed, like water, or it may have been red, representing gura, but it could be that, or it could be, sapphire. It's a precious stone, but it's not, Okay, but, you also don't want to represent the idea that the Torah is out of reach to the average person, Come, Ichlu Reib Shtur V'Shikru Joy.
No, it was something like a quick
thing. Okay, one more thing. Maskifin Aschola Lashlama. So when we finish one Masechta, we immediately start with a line from the next one. The next Masechta, Bava Metzia, begins Shnayim Ochzim B'Talis. Two people are holding onto a talis. Zeh Ma'ani Metzasiyah, Zeh Ma'ani Metzasiyah. This one says, "I found it," and that one says, "I found it." Bez Hashem, whoever comes tomorrow night, we'll talk about Bez Hashem, what the Rebbe explained on this, the Pnimis in Yanim, is a famous long Rishima that the Rebbe wrote in several different versions. It's been published as the Rishima Shneimach in the Talis, about the deeper meaning of this Mishnah. One brief point from it to mention now, the Rebbe points out that if the Mishnah was just describing a hypothetical case, usually the wording would be Shnaim She'oichsim Batalis, Shnaim She'hoyu Oichsim Batalis. If it happens that two people are grabbing a hold of a talis, each one saying, Ani Mitzasiya, here's the din. Instead, the Mishnah phrases it like Shnaim Oichsim Batalis as a given. Two people are definitely going to be holding on to a talis. So what does that mean? The Rebbe explains that in this Rishima, what the deeper meaning of the talis is, that it has to do with what mitzvahs accomplish in protecting a person, beruchnius, and therefore shnayim ochim talis, inevitably it's going to happen when one person convinces another one to do a mitzvah, inevitably you're going to have two people grabbing a hold of that talis, of that benefit of the mitzvah, and each one claiming rights to it. So it's an inevitable thing. One yid can get another one to do a mitzvah, and then they both have a certain share in the credit. So in the Mishnah, they're fighting. But as it comes down here, Lamasa, they're fighting about it. It doesn't have to be in Avodah, not necessarily they're fighting as in opponents and based in, but they each have a certain legal. They each have a certain valid claim on it. Applying that to our situation over here, then we need to have more shnayim that are oichzim in that talis, that one person tells another to join in limud haTorah, whether it's over here, whether it's any of the numberless number of shiurim that there are here in Crown Heights or Vancouver or wherever else we live. But that one yid should be bringing another one to join in under that talis. And then afterwards sharing in the benefit of said talis.
Right.
Yeah. Hi.
Open invitation. You
come 1 2 weeks, come 1 to 2 weeks, come.
Nizikin caused by your property, nizikin caused by you yourself, etc. Bav Metzia is a lot more variable and includes the dinim of lost objects, the first two prakim, the dinim of shomrim, the dinim of certain basic dinim of buying and selling, the dinim of ribis, the dinim of employer-employee relationships. If you wanted to put it in a word, I guess maybe, it's things that don't have to do with nizikin, but also don't have to do per se with the ownership of something. Let's say the ownership of something is more going to be in Bava Basra. There's a Zohar, actually, that points out this sort of that everyone's talked about. I think it's in the Zohar that everyone's talked about it in one of the Sifas and in one of the last years in Nun Aleph and Nun Beis. That there's a certain progression over there representing the progression of humanity and the Jewish people specifically towards Yemos HaMashiach. You start out with everybody is adversarial to each other, you know, and nizikin, people are causing damage to each other. Eventually, you get civilized enough that you're in the position of Bav Metzia. You're arguing, two people are arguing over a talis, but fine, you know, it's just that, you know, at least they're coming to Beis Din and hashing it out, right? And then finally, you come to Bava Basra, which starts out with Hashutvin, partners who own something jointly. So yeah, that's above Matthias. We're going to be talking the middle of those stages when people are starting to get civilized yet, but there's still a ways to go.
And that's both the discussion and
Bruni, yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah.